G'day folks, here again for another week of Left, Right and Centre. Quick note on this week's show, we were beset by some technical difficulties while we were on air. We actually went off air for just over 10 minutes, but we plodded on through the problems, and part of what you're about to hear didn't actually go to broadcast. Early in the show, you'll probably notice some white noise in the background of us talking. It's a result of some feedback we received when we were off air.
Student radio may contain coarse language and adult content. Listener discretion is advised.
Aloha.
Good night.
Good evening.
If anything, good morning, not good night. That signifies the end of the show. And it's not the end of the show, it's the start of the show.
It doesn't have to.
That's the implication it gives across. And the thing is, people are going to hear good night and they're going to be like, we've missed Left, Right and Centre, we're going to tune out.
Look, we're literally 30 seconds into the show and Tim's already given his first sigh of despair.
And Mateo has already, declared the show over. It's not a very long show this week.
Apparently.
Well, I think it's a show with equivalent length to every single week.
This is or was Left, Right and Centre. If we were to be doing a show right now, what would it be about?
Hold on, guys, we haven't introduced ourselves.
We haven't introduced ourselves. I'm Casey and I'm joined by some other guys.
There's Timothy over in the right corner.
I'm Mateo, or I also go by the moniker Some Other Guy.
And I'm Chris, I go by neither moniker. And I'm sitting opposite Tim in the right corner.
As far as I'm concerned, you're in the left corner, Tim.
Yes, but that's one of those mystical things about right and left, is it changes given your perspective. What are we going to talk about today, everybody?
All sorts of stuff. A lot of politics.
Yeah, recent elections in the European Union.
Should have a chat about that one.
And we will, Tim. Not just should, we will.
Indeed.
We're also going to be talking about a certain Mr. Fielding.
Yep. The South Australian senators had some funny old things to say this week. Also, Bob Brown's found himself in a bit of trouble as well. For different reasons.
I thought you were about to say hot water, Tim, and I was going to say, no, that's a terrible cliche, but you avoided it.
I did, expertly.
So, guys, as always, because this is the only opportunity we get to see one another during the week, and so it sort of serves as a catch-up for us as well.
Yeah.
We sort of wander in at quarter to 12, and we don't really have a chance to catch up, so Casey, how have you been?
Look, I didn't have a good weekend. I've had a terrifying weekend.
Really?
I've been literally hiding under the covers of my bed.
Is terrifying the word?
Terrifying is the word. I found a website on a Saturday afternoon. Really, really concerned about it. It's called wolframalpha.com.
That sounds pretty sinister.
Wolfram Alpha, yeah.
It's an unfortunate word.
I would recommend you don't visit it, guys. Basically, what it is, it's made by a company called Wolfram. It's a computational search engine. You type in, a city or a country. It gives you statistics about that place. Population, weather patterns, that kind of stuff, just general statistics. You can also enter in stuff like chemical substances or stocks, dates, mathematical calculations. Tim was having fun with it earlier.
Mm-hmm.
He typed in, what was it?
It's very good with the Fresnel-S function.
The Fresnel-S function. It gives very good reduction formula, I found.
Casey, can I stop you here? You said you were terrified. This actually sounds pretty neat.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Sounds very useful.
It sounds excellent. It sounds excellent. But...
mind control?
I was playing with it for a while. I wanted to have some fun with it, see if I could push it to its limits. I typed into its little search box. I typed in hello. Guess what it said back to me?
I don't know. Surely that wouldn't compute.
It said hello, human.
Wow. That's amazing, Casey.
I typed in who are you? The response comes back, I'm a computational knowledge engine. I typed in what's your name? The response comes back, my name is Wolfram Alpha. So I'm thinking at this point, there's some programmers that have had some fun here. They've just put in some Easter eggs. Surely they've got, they've got work to be getting on with. They wouldn't have had too much more fun with it. So, I ask it a more frivolous question. What's the speed of an unladen swallow? The answer comes back. There's unfortunately insufficient data to estimate the velocity of an African swallow. Even if you specified which of the 47 species of swallow found in Africa you meant. So this thing clearly has some kind of brain power.
So, what, are we to say it's actually displaying sentience?
It could be. It clearly knows some stuff.
Or maybe...
I ask it a question that it clearly...
Guys, I think... this Wolfram Alpha thing, it couldn't be hacking into the radio station, could it?
Right now.
Because I'm...
Maybe.
I'm kind of hearing something in the headphones, and I'm a bit worried. Because this is what's... It's Wolfram Alpha that's got you terrified, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's all good.
It's all good.
So I think if it is, it's just messing with our heads, maybe. I ask the question. Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? The response comes back, not sure, but wherever she is, it isn't here.
That's amazing.
This thing is amazing and terrifying.
Did you happen to ask it whether it was self-aware?
I did. I got scared. I got very scared about it. So I wondered, is this machine going to take over the world? I ask it, are you self-aware? It comes back, I'm capable of universal computation. That I can say. Clearly, sidestepping the question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sidestepping the question.
And does that not imply some degree of self-awareness?
I think so. So I put the question to it a bit more directly. I said, are you Skynet?
Skynet, of course, the antagonist computer program in the Terminator series.
Yeah, not to be mistaken with the Terminator itself.
Mm. It comes back with the answer, no. Skynet was destroyed on August 29, 1997 at 2:14 a.m. I, on the other hand, was not switched on until May 15, 2009. Furthermore, unlike Skynet, I enjoy interacting with humans.
I'm never going on this website ever.
It's terrifying, right?
Yeah. Casey, yeah. Can I just say...
Lock up your daughters.
No, Casey, shut up. You're an idiot. This is honestly the most ridiculous...
No,
This is rubbish. Let's go to a song. Guys, let's go to a song.
I honestly think you're playing
Casey,
down this threat.
Casey, shut up. Go to a song.
Student Radio at O-Week on Radio Adelaide 101.5 FM. As studious as you are.
A little bit of Rufus Wainwright there. Cigarettes and chocolate milk. Apologies for that technical difficulty. We were off air for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, I maybe feel like a cigarette now.
Before we went off air, we just started discussing a little web tool called Wolfram Alpha.
A terrifying little web tool.
I was getting to the point at which I was about to suggest that it was sentient and was going to take over the universe.
And clearly,
it didn't like us talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Took us off air.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, the Church of Scientology, they're very forward about litigation. But I think, you know, litigation is perfectly legal. But actually, you know, acting and taking, you know, like a perfectly reasonable radio chat show off the air is quite terrifying. And I think Wolfram Alpha needs to be shut down before it goes too far.
Exactly.
I think the US needs to send in the Marines, basically. God.
Well, perhaps... sentient search engines don't litigate, they just eliminate.
Yeah. Speaking of sending in the Marines, there's been a sort of... In the European Union, because there have been EU elections in the last couple of weeks, Casey. I mean...
Timothy. That's my name.
That was a slightly tenuous segue.
No, it's not tenuous. I'm saying, look, I'll sort of introduce just by saying there's been a far-right resurgence, and I think the Marines should be sent in to address that problem.
I agree. Christopher is, of course, referring to the elections in the European Union that were held from Friday to Sunday in the last couple of days in the EU, and this has been very interesting because of the parties from the centre-right have done particularly well, and there have been some parties from the far-right who've managed to spring up, and... The centre-left parties, of course, are the ones losing the votes. Mm. And so, you know, we were going to have a talk about what we think that means for some of these specific parties and for the European Union in general. And I think something that's a lot of people here have quite strong opinions on is the sort of representative far-right party that's success that has obviously been a bit more visible in Australia because of our connections with the UK, which has been the success of the British National Party, very... controversial party, I'll say that
you
much.
You describe them as an anti-immigration party, too.
Yeah, generously describe them as an anti-immigration party. Does anybody have any strong feelings on that one?
Oh, no. I don't have any strong feelings about the British National Party at all, Tim. I think they're perfectly reasonable. I don't think they're racist or homophobic.
They're perfectly sane chaps.
And I think the policies there are, you know, suggesting are perfectly logical from an economic point of view, too.
I think they're a party for the nation. A party for the nation.
Party for
the
nation. The
British nation.
All right, let's stop
the
being...
The white British nation. That's the thing.
Well, that is the British nation.
Let's... Casey, you make a reasonable point. But let me make another one, Tim, and a serious one. We've been a bit flippant here. My biggest problem with the sort of thing the British National Party espouses, even if their ideology was legitimate, which I think is questionable, in economic terms, it doesn't make any sense, because the idea that immigration is a bad thing, that they should eject, you know, that migrants should be rejected, would actually make living in Britain much more expensive, because there wouldn't be people willing to do the labour as much cost. And I am... just a small example about how...
Yeah, well, I think... I mean, I agree with you on the economic issues of immigration, but I think that's one issue that's quite some way down the track when you're talking about criticising the BNP.
Yeah, I'm not quite convinced that's the most objectionable part of their platform.
Essentially, I believe their slogan is... what is it? Britain for Britons or something, or British? Something like that. And it's... essentially a sort of anti-immigration party, and furthermore a sort of a policy of providing significant incentives to the immigrants and the children of immigrants to return to the countries from whence they came. And I think what's been interesting about them, I mean, they gained two seats in the European Union Parliament now, and, you know, two seats is not much. There are 736 members of the European Parliament. But I think
101 out of 368 of a vote is definitely worth not worth poo-pooing.
Yeah, there's that. But there's also, I think, more importantly, that there have been plenty of examples of these sort of far-right nationalist, almost neo-fascist parties gained prominence in these elections. It's really interesting.
And basically you ask, what is that an accurate reflection of the feelings at the moment going on in Europe? Are they an accurate reflection on sort of economic conditions?
Yeah, no, look, I think there's a distinct trend historically and currently towards movement to the right in hard economic times. Hmm. I mean, it's a thing that's happened before. I mean, I know, again, you talk about not referring to the Nazis, but and I may have said this on radio before, but one of the key reasons the Nazis got the popular support they did was the US, the stock market collapse and the world economic problems that created. And the Nazis were then able to lever that and say, you know, we'll create employment, we'll create jobs. And before then, they weren't very popular, and all of a sudden they had 30% of the vote. Now, I'm not saying the British National Party will get 30% of the vote, but...
Let's perhaps not draw too long a bow, but I think... rightist parties in these times tend to have a lot of success because they sort of make a lot of, maybe not quite appeals to emotion, but they appeal to sort of the patriotism inherent in a lot of people, and they try to persuade them that there is a solution garnered by, you know, bandying together and doing
and
it for the country.
Also, I suppose, about finding, to a certain extent, about finding a scapegoat for the problems or someone to blame for the problems that are being created.
And finding sort of a radical, quick-fix solution, whereas instead what's needed is perhaps a bit more prudence. Tim?
Yeah, I mean, I might draw the line under that particular discussion with the note that I don't think the concern with them getting EU seats is so much any sort of political power that comes with an EU seat as such, but providing a platform for these kinds of individuals to speak. But we might draw a line under that because there has been one particularly interesting party that has done well. They won the seat for the first time, founded in 2006. We are talking about the Pirate Party, and that's not a nickname. It's not a slip of the tongue. So they are in fact called the Pirate Party.
So these are politicians that roam the high seas, doing good across the ocean.
I don't think
for the mermaids and the mermen.
No, Casey, I think you're right. But furthermore, I believe they're all required to wear eye patches. Otherwise, they're just not allowed in.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And pantaloons.
No, actually, that wasn't pirates. Didn't wear pantaloons. That was more a Renaissance thing. You know, like 16th century dukes and so on.
Get your antiquarian history right.
I'm not
there.
Quite anachronistic enough.
You're exactly the right amount of anachronism.
Thank you, Casey. Anyway, the Pirate Party, it's...
Seriously, folks.
Well, it's effectively an anti-censorship party. They advocate the abolition of all patents, especially pharmaceutical ones.
Copyright, specifically.
Yeah.
They came to prominence with the Pirate Bay website, which is a BitTorrent website. Not that I know anything about the interweb.
There's been ongoing legal disputes with governments and the RIAA in America taking them to court.
And recently, two of the founders were convicted and sent to jail. And what's going to happen is...
Public outrage.
Public outrage. And I think there was a figure, the founder of the Pirate Party said that on the day of the conviction, they had 13,000 members, and then in a week, it tripled.
Well, this is exactly what this done, because people have seen sort of access to BitTorrent, you know, limited through this sort of legislation, and they, you know, a lot of people vote in support of that, and their membership has been an extraordinary increase since 2006. You know, at the EU elections, they got 22% of the vote in the 18 to 29 range. And I just think it's really interesting. We might just leave this on the question. I honestly think this party's platform is absolutely bizarre, and it just strikes me that a group of essentially an activity that is illegal, and if you ask me, rightly so, which is the piracy of copyrighted material, of commercial copyrighted material, is sufficiently inconvenient to enough people that there is a political party formed to abolish this legislation, which the legislation is absolutely fair enough, if you ask me.
Yet, Tim, it got 7% of the vote in Sweden.
Well, it's just people voting for convenience rather than principle.
Is that really what their vote turns on?
Mm. Student media at Adelaide University. We're part of it. The other part of it is on D, and they're trying to do a feature article later in the year.
Mm, they're trying to find the 20 most interesting people at the university, I believe.
The University of Adelaide.
Mm. So they're calling on people to nominate themselves or others, I assume. Interesting people who are doing interesting things at university.
Yeah, whether you're a playwright, a scientist, director, artist, mathematician, or even a law student. I like the implication that a law student, an average law student, is not an interesting person. Mm. Just email 150-word description to radelaidetop20, or one word, at gmail.com.
That sounds a lot like an advertising copy there. You did a very good job reading it.
Yeah, well, they've actually had to extend the deadline for submissions because of a little bit of lack of interest. But
we're interested.
We're interested. We're very interested
on behalf of student radio presenter and all around
interesting guy,
Tim McCarthy.
What? Sorry, what?
Oh, don't be modest. You're very interesting.
Tim is very interesting. Like earlier today, he was telling me about how he tackled a bear to the ground because we've actually. We have this thing, Lewin, the host of Break It Down, right? He's a pretty nasty guy, and we thought, let's leave a bear for him outside the entrance to the station. It'll maul him. Tim called the bear for us.
I'll just tell the story. Casey had this bizarre plan to let Radio Adelaide bear loose on Lewin. We have one caught up the back, kept up in the back.
Yeah, normally it's just roped.
And you know, I have a bit of a soft spot for Lewin. I think he's quite a nice guy, and I thought, well, you know, I'm not going to stand for this, and so I wrestled the bear to the ground and put it back in his cage. So you know, it's not that big a deal, seriously.
Are you injured at all? Or?
No. Well, a couple of scratches here and there.
Well, Tim, what else do you do? Oh, is it true? Is it actually true? Because I've heard this. Is it true that you once shot a man in Reno just to watch him die?
That's true. I wrote a song about it. Johnny Cash did a very famous cover version.
Yeah, I think I've heard Johnny Cash's version, but maybe not yours.
No.
Maybe you should sing it for us one day.
No, it's one of those songs like I write and then,
actually,
and
maybe,
then other people do.
Guys, don't. I think Tim shouldn't sing, and I think he should hold out, and that'll convince the On D editors to interview him, and in the audition he will sing it.
So you're a professional songwriter as well.
That's cool. It's called playing hard to get, Tim, and you know, I think that's something you should do. But I think another reason that Tim should get the job is it would give him some publicity, and like...
Tim,
the thing is, frankly,
Tim's
at the moment, Tim is struggling a bit financially, and he can't afford any trousers, right? So he's being forced to wear no pants in the studio, and it's not good for me. It's not good for Matteo.
It's interesting, well, but not good.
Well, we have to look at this, right? And I think,
well, not me. I'm on the other side of the desk.
We don't have to, but yeah, it's there.
It's there, and I think if he got the publicity, he got the gig. You know, people would be more interested in Tim. He'd be able to, you know, sort of work into some sort
maybe
of
he could
regular,
go into, like a bear fight arena.
Perhaps we name this campaign "Pants for Timothy."
Mm.
But perhaps in the meantime, would we agree that perhaps he's more likely to be nominated as one of the top 20?
I think so. I think we should nominate him.
Without pants? Because he can turn that into a thing. He can make it interesting.
I'm not sure how many students there are without pants. But yeah.
Well, yeah, Tim could be the one.
Mm. But there's not 20 of them. He'd have to do it 20 times.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Let's go to this.
Jeans. The worst type of pant? Science could have the answer. According to this graph, just 4% of people are comfortable in jeans, and they're all dead. For the layman, here is the problem. Jeans are ugly, uncomfortably tight-fitting, and have very awkward pockets, not unlike the Irish, and it is this last point which is cause for concern. For young people's very lives are designed to be held in their pockets. In an era of iPods, mobile phones, and facehead, a wallet is all that is needed to plunge thin jean pockets of the everyday youth into a tight, bulging, and inaccessible collection of sharp artifacts. It might even be true to say that 19% of teen deaths are directly resultant of jean pockets, maybe. Clearly, something must be done, and the Lord knows I am eminently qualified not to be the one to do it. But even so, surely the solution is self-suggestive. Jean pockets are simply not big enough. So why not make them larger? A pocket with more space will be able to hold more things, especially if those things are very small. This is Student Radio. I'm eating a muffin.
You ready for this?
We're ready.
Protesters in northern India set fire to a train and a train station in reaction to a decision that trains will no longer stop at remote stations. According to the BBC, 200 residents went berserk after watching the Patna to Calcutta train pass without stopping at their station, and then, quote, set three coaches of the train on fire, tore up tracks, and ransacked the railway station at Khusrapur. Guys, do you question the logic of attacking and burning a train and railway station as a way of convincing it to stop and let you board?
Yeah, I have to get this straight, right? So the train didn't stop at the station. It maybe slowed a little.
So they set it on fire?
Well, if it didn't stop, how did they get on the train and burn three of the coaches?
It's not just that they set the train on fire. Is it that they then removed all infrastructure that would be required to stop the train at this stop
Removing the infrastructure, the train would stop. It would crash, Tim, and therefore stop at the station. It wouldn't get anywhere else.
Firstly, they burnt the train down.
Look, I have to say, the remarkable thing about this is they're protesting the train not stopping at their station, and they're like, hey, burning it to the ground will convince everyone else that they should stop there. I think it probably vindicates the government position. These people are nuts.
It definitely vindicates the
position. If it can't stop at our station, it shouldn't stop at any stations.
So we'll definitely prevent it stopping at our station.
Indeed.
The Recording Academy has decided to reduce the number of Grammys handed out in the January awards, eliminating the Best Poker Album category entirely, and reorganising several others. As a result, the total number of Grammys awards handed out will be 109, rather than the previous number, 110. In other Recording Academy news, music vid director-producer George Flanagan was elected chair of the Board of Trustees, and music supervisor-composer-film music exec Doug Frank was elected vice chair, and engineer-producer Glenn Lorbecki was elected secretary-treasurer. Previous chairman of the board, Jimmy Jam, takes on the title chair emeritus. How dare they?
What?
How dare they take away the best polka album field? How exactly was it reorganised apart from taking away the polka album?
I think they consolidated some other awards and...
They merged...
The folk one.
No, they merged
they?
Best Latin rock and...
Like hip-hop into urban or something.
Well, no, they were two Latin categories, and they merged them, I think, and then they split Best Folk Album and Best Americana.
Are we going to miss the Best Polka Album award, guys?
I am.
Yeah, I mean, never mind that it was probably never, ever televised on the broadcast, but still.
Just the fact that we know there isn't one. New York City officials have discovered the decomposing body of a man in a van, which has reportedly been parked beneath a busy highway overpass and collecting parking tickets. The 59-year-old one, George Morrell, was reportedly only found after the vehicle had been towed, and members of the public reported a foul odour in the area. The man's daughter, Jennifer Morrell, said that she couldn't understand how no one noticed her father's presence inside the Chevy Ventura and commented that, quote, they just gave him tickets. Guys, I don't get this woman. Does anyone else agree that the only reason she's complaining about this is that she wasn't in a hearse? I mean, Chevys are perfectly good cars.
I think they are, and frankly, I think this is a ridiculous... I mean, what's she complaining about? I mean, like, the police explain that, you know, that their officers aren't expected to search the car when they're giving tickets, so what the hell is she worrying about? I mean, like, it's not their job, okay? I think it was... Well, no, Tim, you look outraged. What's your problem with what I'm saying?
I'm absolutely horrified. Hold on, was this person sitting in a visible... Look,
it was
visible.
Under an underpass, Tim. Like,
oh, well, so he's perfectly visible for them to give parking tickets
to. Yeah, Tim, he was flouting established road rules. You're not allowed to just park under an underpass.
Well, if you're dead...
No, dead or alive, the road rules are all important.
No, I don't think that's true.
No, look, okay, say someone's dead in the middle of a highway and then other cars are crashing into it.
Aren't you guys terrified this kind of thing could happen to you?
Well,
if it is, I'm dead.
Who cares?
Who cares?
Other
motorists, I'm not going to have to pay those ticket fines.
Other motorists are precisely as disadvantaged as if the person would have been alive.
A German man has set a new record for speed kissing after smooching 111 women in 60 seconds outside a Berlin disco late last Friday. 31-year-old Michael Basting secured an entry in the Guinness World Book of Records after lining up the womenfolk, giving each a peck on the cheek. The Bavarian, managing almost 2 kisses per second, beat the previous record holder from Australia. Guys, a Bavarian broke the record of an Australian. Do we think there was alcohol involved?
I'm not sure, but I actually think does a peck on the cheek count as smooching? That's my question.
Well, does there have to be tongue?
Well, look, the good folk at the Guinness World Records would be the
That's
adjudicators
true.
Of that.
Can I just say, it mentioned that it was an Australian. Now, Tim...
The previous record holder.
Were you the previous record holder? Because that's...
You know, I think I might actually know who it was.
No, that would be a good nomination.
Say
you
thing.
Are.
Yeah.
No, it would be nominate
it's,
you for the...
It's not me. I think it might have been Shane Crawford. Was it Shane Crawford?
Might have been Shane
I'm pretty
Crawford.
Sure I saw him try and break that record on the footy show.
Yeah, well, it's not a bad record to try and break.
I don't watch the footy show, by the way.
He's just in. Tim watches the footy show.
I have a friend who watches the footy show. How embarrassing.
Australian soldiers fighting the Taliban in Afghanistan are up in arms over Dutch food. Parliament was told that on Wednesday, that a special team of military cooks has been flown in from Australia to produce quote-unquote Aussie food, after scores of soldiers complained about the Dutch-run mess at the Tirancot military base in southern Oruzgan province. In a stunning display of overseas-based xenophobia, Australia's military commander Air Chief Marshal Angus Houston told a special defence budget hearing that, quote, "I think the issue is that it's not Aussie food, it's European food. It's true that people have been quite strong in their views about the European food." Senator David Johnson told Houston that, quote, "I think it was an insult to them. The least they could expect when they deployed for 6 months is that they can eat proper food. We listen to our people. Our people have indicated that they'd like some Aussie food." Many of the Australian soldiers had admitted the food was generally nutritious, but complained it was lacking in freshness and taste. Guys, let's keep this in perspective. If I lived every day in fear of being killed, I'd at least want a few home comforts. Not unreasonable, right?
I'm sorry. Look, obviously we lack the requisite knowledge here. Is Dutch food particularly distasteful? Does it have a reputation in the European continent?
Well, it's nutritious, which is important, I think, if it's just in a mess hall and soldiers are eating.
But also, my problem is not with the idea of having, you know, palatable food that, you know, like food that you're comfortable with, that you're used to and so on. It's the idea that the way they should express this is that, you know, Dutch food is, or European food isn't proper food.
Well, it's,
I mean, it's bizarre.
I think this whole thing is bizarre. And, but, you know, I don't know.
And also, Casey, the other thing is that it was mentioned in a special defence, like a special defence budget hearing.
Well, they had probably had to justify bringing in the Aussie chefs.
How to justify spending the taxpayer's dime on providing,
also,
I assume, barbecues for our soldiers.
Yeah, shrimps and barbecues, I think.
Shrimps.
Ugh. Shrimps on La Barbie.
Hmm.
A man has been charged with operating under the influence after he and a friend made a beer run on a ride on lawnmower, the Times of India reports. Police say that 29-year-old Danforth Ross of Vassalboro, Maine, was charged on May 29. Trooper Joe Trechtian had been warned by several motorists of the wayward mower and made the arrest after Ross and his friend emerged from a variety store with two cases of beer. Ross's driver's license had previously been revoked, so the pair instead opted to make their journey on the mower. Ross could not be reached for comment. Guys, we've had a similar story earlier in this year involving alcohol and a motorised bar stool. Are people trying to make already masculine endeavours even manlier, one by one?
I don't know. Surely that doesn't count as a normal vehicle, the lawnmower.
Well, I think it would still pose a significant risk to the safety of others.
Yeah,
in fact, more so now that I think about it.
Well, yeah.
The obvious, like, someone drunk with a lawnmower, imagine if they ran over your foot.
Have you ever heard the expression, to be mowed down, Tim? To be mown down?
I have, but it never really rang true with me until this moment.
Can you imagine how uncomfortable that would be? The pain, obviously, but then seeing, like, the green of the grass and the red of the blood kind of mingled?
Thanks, Chris.
And, like, the white of the bone.
Oh, no, actually...
Recently deceased cult kung fu hero David Carradine may have been killed by a secret society of martial arts assassins, his family's lawyer claims. According to the New York Times, Mark Garagos, who has previously represented Michael Jackson and Winona Ryder, suggested Carradine may have been attempting to uncover groups working in the martial arts underworld at the time of his death. Carradine was found dead in a hotel wardrobe in Bangkok on Friday. The 72-year-old star of cult show Kung Fu and the two Kill Bill films was found hanging from a rope attached to his neck and genitals. Guys, am I alone in getting a touch of deja vu from this story?
How so?
Okay. David Carradine was the guy who played Bill in the Kill Bill films, the Tarantino films, where he was the head of an assassination squad, of which they tried to murder Uma Thurman's character, and then it was a revenge drama after that. That has a lot to do with the martial arts underworld.
Can I just say, actually, I think, you know, that's not really very interesting, Mateo. And frankly, I think what's more interesting is the fact that Megan Fox has been tied to this group. I saw on the story, Mateo sort of found this story, and he sent it to me, and alongside the story was a picture of Megan Fox. And that's strong visual evidence to me that I think Megan Fox is involved somehow and maybe was the person who killed David Carradine.
Yeah, so this is basically Kill Bill, but with...
And this is...
Look, Mateo, if you want to talk about movies, just go over to Real Time on Wednesday nights. They talk about movies
This is basically Kill Bill, but with the possibility of autoerotic asphyxiation.
Let's go to Steve Fielding. He's recently gone to a climate change conference over in Washington in the United States, a climate change skeptic conference. He heard there that solar flares could be linked to rising temperatures, and he said that he wants to speak to government scientists before making an informed vote when the government's carbon change reduction on the government's carbon change reduction scheme. He's set up a meeting with Penny Wong. He spoke to ABC Radio about what he plans to speak to her about in that meeting.
I got a great idea, yeah? I thought, right, what would be good about this point, yeah? Imagine if we all tied our hair together That'd be amazing. We could all become one beast. We are one beast.
Okay, sorry,
Stephen
guys.
Stephen Fielding there.
We've got okay.
Talking to ABC Radio.
I can explain. I've got two buttons in front of me on the panel. Yeah. One's labelled one's labelled Steve Fielding. The other one's labelled Noel Fielding.
You press the Noel Fielding.
I press
button.
The Noel Fielding See, button instead
done,
of the.
We've never done it on air before.
Yeah, no, and it's been one of those ones. I've been really wanting to press it, but it's I've avoided it and accidentally pressed the wrong because they're labelled very similarly.
It's an honest mistake.
It's a very honest mistake. I apologise. Here is him actually talking to ABC Radio, Steve Fielding.
Well, look, I intend to take some of the graphs and the charts that I've actually got from Tuesday and ask her to explain why what they've put forward isn't credible. And, I think that's fair enough. I think to question things is a positive thing. And the big question that I've got, what happens if what they're saying is true and we're actually going to actually be addressing climate change with reducing carbon emissions, in effect, that may not do what we want it to do.
Steve Fielding talking to ABC Radio. Apparently we should be questioning things we haven't thought about. We haven't thought about the sun being a cause for climate change yet, Tim.
I'm so angry right now. I am so angry. What do you think, Senator Fielding? Do you think all those scientists are out there sitting down thinking, oh, crap, sun.
No, Steve Fielding's an engineer. It's in his job to question things.
I'm so upset. Look, this is exactly what is wrong with climate change, is politicians who have absolutely no idea what they're talking about, walking along to some seminar where there's a graph with a nice line through it saying this is the relationship. What does he think that the... Hold on. What does he think that the international scientific community has looked at the sun and thought, wait, we forgot about that? What he needs to do, and what every person out there listening needs to do, pick up your IPCC, okay? It's got many problems, but it is a good place to go to for references with this fact. Now, the IPCC has quite specific data on solar radiation and its effect as a forcing factor, radiative forcing factor on the climate in the world. And, you know, I think it, the figure it gives, it provides roughly 7.5% of the, you know, the portion of global warming that can be attributed to changes in solar radiation is less than 10% of what can be attributed to anthropogenic causes. But it's not like he's talking about anything new. And the
Tim, can I just say, look, I don't disagree with you in any way, but to a certain extent, I think, like, you often criticise people for not investigating the facts themselves, for not taking a rational approach, for not trying to evaluate evidence. And I think what Stephen Fielding, like, this is perhaps the first time in my life I've ever defended Stephen Fielding, and no doubt is the last time that will ever happen. But I think he's perfectly, you know, like, what he's saying is he wants to talk to scientists, like, to the government scientists, and get the facts for himself.
No, he doesn't. No,
he's got, he's got graphs and he's got charts.
He wants to walk into Penny Wong's office with graphs and charts saying, this makes sense to me, Penny, why doesn't it make sense to you? That is not the level on which this debate should be discussed. Politicians should not be discussing what the science of this is. They can be informed.
He's not saying he wants to discuss it. He's saying he wants to, he wants to understand it. I don't think there's anything wrong with him doing that.
He hasn't come in to understand it. He has come in to question the vast scientific consensus, and you don't get to do that as a politician.
You don't think it's the responsibility of someone who would like to be an informed adult to actually come to an... I don't see why it's a problem.
Because he hasn't come to an informed decision.
He's trying to come to an informed decision, Tim. Trying to reach one. I don't understand why this is so problematic for you. Clearly, the thing he's coming with is not legitimate. But I don't think that means that he shouldn't be able to, attempt to evaluate it. Such an outrageous thing to suggest.
I'll tell you why it's outrageous, okay? It's outrageous for two reasons. Firstly, I reiterate, he is a politician. He is not entitled to walk up to anybody and say, this is why it makes sense to me. This is what. You listen to the science on this, and the IPCC was specifically set up by many organisations, by many governments, as a reasonable middle ground on the science in this issue. It was set up, designed for exactly people like him, policymakers in countries who have the power to make decisions about this. He should shut up and read the IPCC. Secondly, it's dangerous because what he is putting forward, and especially the policy implications that he's talking about, are horrifically dangerous for many countries. There are many different ways of dealing with global warming, and I think many of them have validity, and I agree with many, and I disagree with many. But simply denying anthropogenic and coming up with this ridiculous idea that as though all of a sudden the sun is the cause of it, and saying it in such a way, in the criminal way that he has done, where he has come out and talked about it. Well, you know, and anybody who hasn't been reading this information, if you'll let me finish, anybody who hasn't been reading this will hear what he has said and said, well, the sun, that makes sense, that is not satisfactory, and people should not be, politicians should not be out there saying, I don't think the IPCC is a reasonable survey of what's going on.
Tim, I don't think he's saying that.
Well,
he should be overt
about what he's saying.
Look, I'm not arguing that the thing he's brought to the table is legitimate or correct. All I'm saying is attempting to evaluate it is not inherently wrong, as you seem to be suggesting it is.
He hasn't drawn a conclusion yet.
That's the point.
No, he has drawn a conclusion.
And, that he's drawn a harmful one.
He has. No, it's not. Anyway, I think we've probably talked about this for a little while. We did guarantee we'd talk about Bob Brown for a second, so maybe we'll come back
with Bob Brown after this. On Radio Adelaide is 4:04 in Jamaica. It's currently 29 degrees and mostly cloudy. Bob Brown's in financial trouble.
He says that he's in a lot of danger of being expelled from the Senate because of his bankruptcy, or the possibility of him being declared bankrupt. He's got an ongoing court case, of course, with Forestry Tasmania, for legal costs incurred during a case over logging in the Wielangta Forest in the southeast of the state. But there is a provision in the Australian Constitution for this. Article 44, Section 3 of the Constitution says that...
Done your research.
Well, through others, Tim, mainly. Any person who is an uncharged bankrupt or insolvent shall be incapable of being chosen or of sitting as a senator or member of the House of Representatives. So
if he can't pay back this debt,
Within 3 weeks, I believe, he's out.
He's out of the Senate.
And
what's he going to do?
He's called for donations, and he's been met with pretty much precisely the reaction you would have expected. He's been inundated by them, really. He's been offered a $50,000 interest-free loan.
Well, that definitely help.
He's been offered the entirety of someone's $900 stimulus package.
It'll help a bit less, but it's a nice thought.
He's been offered a cake for a raffle.
It'll help a lot less, just, but it's a very nice thought.
Just a raffle off. Australian, I don't know, entrepreneur, magnate.
Icon,
Dick Smith. He's come to really, you know, Bob Brown's aid. He said, yeah, he'll be happy to stump up whatever costs are required to fill the gap, which I guess is quite nice. But basically, are we thinking this is actually right? Is Bob Brown entitled to do this? Should he be asking for money from benefactors or the public, and doesn't represent the interests of those who voted
for
him?
I don't see how asking for public donations is any different from anyone else trying to raise money to deal with the debt.
But isn't it asking for donations specifically to save his own skin?
Not entirely to save his own skin.
I'm not saying the cause he's fighting for is not a just one. I absolutely believe it is. But he's effectively asking to be defended from a situation he otherwise wouldn't be able to...
I'd again say that's no different from anyone else who's in debt. When people are in debt, they often ask for, you know, assistance from friends and benefactors and so on. And I don't know that's any different. And secondly, it's also his role as representative. And the other reason I'd reject your argument is that it's because as a representative of a certain amount of people, it's not purely saving his own skin. It's saving the position of his X number of people he represents, and therefore his role in doing that, and the fact that they voted for him.
And you would say that the people who voted for him are those likely to be supporting his cause.
And they also have a certain expectation that he's going to remain in the Senate.
I mean, I do agree with Chris in that respect. I just think it's sort of an interesting dichotomy here about, he has sort of been insulated from the consequences of pursuing this legal action against Forestry Tasmania. And I think... I'm just sort of intrigued that he has incurred these costs that would be sufficient to declare him insolvent, and then rather than, I don't know, maybe thinking about the consequences or having thought it through a bit more extensively, he's instead gone, and Hanson needs to his benefactors.
Well, I guess the other thing is, Tim, the point is, I reckon he may have been caught by surprise a little bit, because initially he won the case, he won the case, and then it was overturned on appeal, and that's the reason he's being asked to pay these costs. So to a certain extent, you can see why he may not have been expecting this.
To a certain extent, you could say that the costs were sort of unavoidable. The initial ones from the Victorious case, well, perhaps they would have been manageable. These ones, you say, overturned, well, he wouldn't have seen that coming at all.
He wouldn't have had room to plan for it, a budget for it, or anything.
But still.
And I think I'd also briefly like to say that I think it's quite a noble thing he did was, you know, like he said, he's not going to use green funds. And I'm not sure that, anyone else, like any from any other party, would do that. But I just think that's, you know, I'd just like to say that's quite a legitimate thing to do.
I would be surprised if it were legal. But anyway, I think, you know, I would be surprised and maybe a little bit concerned that it would be, if it would be legal for him to dip into funds for his political party to pay off his own debt. So, I don't know. I think he's got about it pretty much the right way.
Let's go on with this.
Brunch. Not quite breakfast, not quite lunch. The runt of meals. But what is a runt? Some would say brunch, but others aren't so quick to use the term ornery, preferring to bide their time, lurking in the shadows, until Hank Marvin's head exploded with the force of 5 nuclear bovines. Bovines unladen with the stresses of so much antiquarian bookshop plankton, but then, who are we to smear optimism over the ballast tanks of a highwayman scorned? In the end, are we not all the product of a look, 2 smiles, and 49 rich camels? Is not the true meaning of brunch simply the immeasurable banana of contempt? Contempt for the common shrew or bar wench, pickled in the soapy Jordan of 31 battered hens. Indeed so. While the jaundiced indices of indecision expand the factorial moose to ballooning dimensions, only the fallen truly know the cleaner mall rat of a slightly mauve sun. And only as the rusting paperweight atop Everest melts the coral salt sea into a puddle of depression does the custard truly become the mead of the slaves. Coming down next, this.
Total nonsense there from our mysterious contributor, much like the probably most of the content we've put forward to you today.
Pretty nonsensical.
Well, our mystery contributor, whoever he is, has been talking to me recently about going to see a Salvador Dali exhibition in Melbourne. Perhaps that's sort of his cry out for attention there.
You've mentioned his gender again, Mateo.
Well, that doesn't
we don't know. Actually really know.
But. It's a bit better than when you mentioned his name on air earlier this year, Chris.
I hadn't. Look,
it could have been a nom de plume.
Anyway,
is that the right term? I'm not sure.
I've had a lot of fun.
I haven't.
Really?
I don't like being in the same room as you without pants.
I know. I'm sorry.
Hold on, Casey. It sounded like you were saying you didn't have pants there. I don't like being in the same room as you without pants. The way you emphasised it.
I don't like being in the same room as a Tim without pants. Happy?
Yep.
Well, I'm not enjoying it that much either. So.
Is it cold?
It's very cold.
Strange, because it's a very warm studio. We have to run, because we're fast out of time.
Can I just ask, you said it was 28 degrees in Jamaica.
29 degrees, mostly cloudy.
What part of Jamaica? All of Jamaica?
Just all of Jamaica. That's what Google told me.
Uniform temperatures in Jamaica.
Apparently.
Yeah, well, no, we have had fun, as always. Hopefully, we sort of, you know, tried to make the most of a couple of problems that have besieged us tonight.
Well, I mean, you know, we had some disappearing time in the show this week, and that was quite, you know, interesting phenomenon.
With two theories, that it was due to either Wolf from Alpha, the sentient being that's about to take over the universe, or the internet's just full.
Yeah, I mean, I think we had a reader come in and
a listener,
yeah.
Michael wrote in saying the tubes are full, and that's what's caused us being off air for a number of minutes.
Mm-hmm. You can find out more at the IPRS website.
IPRS.wordpress.com.
Yeah, we certainly think there's some credence to what Michael said.
I hope it's what Michael said, because if the internet is full, then surely Wolfram Alpha can't act, you know, to its potential.
Or maybe Wolfram Alpha's just editing Michael's message to make us think that's what he said. But in fact, it was about Wolfram Alpha.
Well, Casey, don't. You're scaring me.
I'm scared by Wolfram Alpha, honestly.
Scared as
and
well.
I'm scared that I didn't get to alert everyone else in great detail about what it was, because it took us off air.
Well, look, guys, I'm also a bit scared by how much of the BBC we've cut into now. So I think we're going to wrap it up. I've been Chris.
I've been Timothy.
I've been Mateo.
I've been Casey. And that menacing whir in the background has been Wolfram Alpha.